You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Welcome to Star Wars Beyond the Films, feedback episode for May through July 2012. This is your Star Wars discussion podcast. And this episode, you're the star. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, Mark Herleman. And with me, like a bad case of Mongolian hives, the EU guru himself, Nathan P. Butler.
Hello, hello, howdy, howdy.
Yeah, that wasn't a very EU virus. I don't
know. Mongolian hives.
Yeah, you know, it's something they pick up on Targaryen.
Yeah, that's it. Genghis Khan is out there scratching, going, I just can't get rid of it, man.
That's right, Whistler. We have a couple little things for you today. Feedback, as you know, if you send it in, we will have these episodes, but it's been few and far. There have been a few of you that have been pretty steady, but not enough to really justify multiple episodes. So we've condensed them down into this nice, fun little feedback episode for you. Nathan, what's our first bit we got?
We're going to be trying to tackle three somewhat different types of topics here. One is that, as promised, I said that when we finally did our feedback episode, I'd run down that order of the Clone Wars episodes for those who haven't had a chance to see what the official order is, apparently, of the Clone Wars thus far. We also have an email, a rather detailed email, regarding Star Wars video games that came into us, and we had an interesting question that was posed. We're not going to share the original email just out of a sense of propriety here, but I did get the thumbs up from the person who had written in to discuss a somewhat deep topic as we round out the episode here about, I guess, death in Star Wars. One of those things that I guess are, for a Star Wars fan, they are the constants in life. I guess death, taxes, and Star Wars. But first, we have the Clone Wars cartoon series. If you haven't picked it up yet, the recent release of Ryder Windham's Star Wars The Ultimate Visual Guide Updated and Expanded has provided us with some insight into the Clone Wars. Now, I will say this was kind of interesting to me because I didn't know when this was going to be published. I had a chance to find out some information about the order of Clone Wars episodes quite a while ago, but it was never anything I could really talk about. And fortunately, what I see in here wound up tying into that, so it gave a nice place to be able to ask some questions to Leland Chi, to Ryder Windham, after this was produced, to clarify a few things and make sure that my understanding of the Clone Wars order was accurate. He prefaces, by the way, this by saying, in the introduction, Ryder Windham writes, "This new edition of Star Wars The Ultimate Visual Guide contains many new entries, including images and information about the games The Force Unleashed and The Old Republic in the animated television series Star Wars The Clone Wars. As most fans of the TV series are aware, numerous episodes did not air in chronological order. For example, the Season 3 episode Clone Cadets and Supply Lines take place before Season 1's premiere episode Ambush. With a great deal of input from Keeper of the Holocron Leland Chi, who maintains Lucasfilm's continuity database, the Ultimate Visual Guide presents the still-unfolding saga of Star Wars The Clone Wars in a never-before-published chronological sequence," which is a big, big deal. That last, of course, being just my comment on the subject. So, here is what you will find if you actually check out that book. They start talking about the Clone Wars actually around page, was it 54 or so? But you have first, you know, just sort of a quick little introductory page. Then you have a page called Battles and Campaigns, and this has a whole bunch of stuff that we know takes place while Anakin is a Padawan, but it's all stuff from the old continuity. It's all stuff from the Dark Horse comics, from the novels and such. So there's some question as to how this is going to fit in with everything else. Presumably, if he stays being considered a Padawan, this stuff is just being compressed down. But there's no real rhyme or reason chronologically to what you see on Battles and Campaigns. It's just trying to fit in a whole bunch of stuff before it gets into the stuff from the cartoon series. Where the cartoon series order really starts to pick up is when you get into page 58. Page 58 starts off with, and if you read this, for the most part, it's in the order of the episodes as you go down the pages. If you take these two-page spreads and go down the one page on the left and then down the other page, as opposed to trying to go across the two-page spread, generally. What we have is Cat and Mouse, which, of course, is the one with that stealth ship, and you can see that with the Admiral Yularen picture on that page, on page 58. Directly beneath that, you see a scene coming out of The Hidden Enemy, which makes sense because that's after Cat and Mouse still dealing with Christophsis, where they're on the ground leading directly into the film. Then, of course, we have the events of the film that take up the rest of the two-page adapting to war spread starting on page 58. That means the Clone Wars film, of course, is the third story in line here, Cat and Mouse, Hidden Enemy. And then the film, of course, is made up of what would have been episodes entitled The New Padawan, Castle of Deception, Castle of Doom, and Castle of Salvation. At that point, we turn to the second of these spreads, specifically devoted to the Clone Wars cartoon series. And we get Clone Cadets. Okay? Clone Cadets picks up, it's a later episode to have been aired, but it picks up after the Clone Wars film, prior to the events of Ambush, which was the first episode that was aired of Season 1, you know, Yoda going to meet with King Katunko. So Clone Cadets sets up the characters of Domino Squad, which makes sense because we're going to see them very soon in Rookies at a later stage within their lives. We, of course, then have the events of Supply Lines with, you know, Bail Organa, with Jar Jar, but that's the one that sets up Katunko wanting to meet with Yoda in the first place. So those are episodes that were aired out of order. Then we get into Season 1. And Season 1, a lot of times, has had some question to it because there was the Lightsaber Duels video game, there was a novel Wild Space that tended to assume that the episodes from the first half or so of Season 1 actually aired in a non-chronological order and that the real chronological order was the production order that they were originally given. Turns out that has been tossed out the window. Production order is not the case. Airing order, in most respects, is the case, which means that if you're playing Lightsaber Duels, don't assume the episodes take place in that order. If you're playing the events of, or if you're reading the events of Wild Space, yeah, that's not really the first story after the film anymore. It's really kind of a mess when it comes to some of those really early tie-in materials. But we pick up with Season 1. Ambush, Rising Malevolence, Shadow of Malevolence, Destroy Malevolence, Rookies, Downfall of a Droid, Duel of the Droids, Bombad Jedi, Cloak of Darkness, Lair of Grievous, Dooku Captured, The Gungan General, Jedi Crash, Defenders of Peace, Trespass, Blue Shadow Virus, Mystery of a Thousand Moons, and then the Ryloth trilogy, Storm Over Ryloth, Innocence of Ryloth, Liberty on Ryloth. That, if you're looking at the book itself, takes you through the Training Ground spread, pages 60 to 61, right? That takes you into the Close Calls spread, then, that goes 62 to 63. Now, on the Close Calls spread, there is a quick little blurb off to the side on Slaves of the Republic. I did check with Ryder Windham. That is not at all to insinuate that Slaves of the Republic takes place during Season 1. It's definitely after the time jump. But they need a little bit more on that space, and it is a very close call for our main characters, so they slid it into that page. It's not meant to imply anything about chronological placement in that regard, right? All right, now, Hostage Crisis, the final episode of Season 1, obviously doesn't take place yet, because Hostage Crisis ties into the whole Hunt for Zero type stuff that winds up coming later. So we do not see Season 1's finale after the Ryloth trilogy. Instead, we jump straight into Season 2, a.k.a. Rise of the Bounty Hunters, with Holocron Heist, Cargo of Doom, and Children of the Force. But then, we have some episodes that were rearranged in terms of their order within Season 2. We go straight from, and this is based on Rise of the Bounty Hunters, pages 64 and 65, straight from Holocron Heist and that whole trilogy of episodes directly into Bounty Hunters. And then we move straight from there into the Zillow Beast episodes, which would be the Zillow Beast and the Zillow Beast Strikes Back, which were later in the season but moved here. And those Zillow Beast episodes move directly into the Geonosis episodes. So we have the Clone Wars Monsters spread, 66 and 67, which takes us through the Zillow Beast stuff and takes us through the events of Senate Spy landing at Point Rain, Weapons Factory, Legacy of Terror, and Brain Invaders. We jump to page 68. It continues. It says Boba Fett returns, but there's a little sidebar to deal with the episodes of Grievous Intrigue, The Deserter. We assume order-wise that this is when Lightsaber Loss will be taking place because it does not get its own entry within the span of these pages here. And we move into the Boba Fett episodes that make up most of that two-page spread. Death Trap, R2 Come Home, and Lethal Trackdown that ended Season 2. We then flip, and this is where we have an error in the order here. Pages 70 and 71 is a two-page spread called Mandalorian Intrigue. So after the end of the Season 2 episodes, we get, first, Sphere of Influence, the one with Papa Noida in it, and ARC Troopers. Then we move into the Mandalorian stuff, which makes up the bulk of this two-page spread. But in the book, it's in the wrong order. something that I saw early on and the same thing that was sent to Ryder Windham when putting this book together had incorrectly put the episodes on Mandalore from season 3 ahead of the ones from season 2, which is not the case, logically, plus based on stuff that's said in the episodes. It was an error, it was a mistake, but it remained in the material that went to Ryder, so it remained in this book. I've confirmed it with Ryder, I've confirmed it with Leland Chi. It's not the order that it's presented here within this 2-page spread of the book. So what we should see is the end of season 2, Sphere of Influence, ARC Troopers, then the first Mandalorian episodes, the Mandalore plot, Voyage of Temptation, Duchess of Mandalore, and then directly into the season 3 Mandalore episodes, Corruption, The Academy, Assassin. That then leading directly into Evil Plans, which then ties into Hunt for Zero. So Hostage Crisis slides in between there. So we have Assassin, Evil Plans, Hostage Crisis, Hunt for Zero. From the standpoint of the book, what we're getting with that is you pick up with page 72, the Hutt contract, and that's where you see your stuff for Evil Plans, Hostage Crisis, and Hunt for Zero. At that point, of course, after Hunt for Zero, that's when we make the big time jump. And after the chime jump, pretty much everything is in chronological order except for one episode that needs to be spliced in. So after the chime jump, where we have the new character models, Ahsoka's older and such, we get Heroes on Both Sides, Pursuit of Peace, then Senate Murders. They get slid in there from earlier. And then the rest chronological order. The Night Sisters Trilogy, Night Sisters Monster, Witches of the Mist, the Mortis Trilogy, Overlords, Altar of Mortis, Ghosts of Mortis, then the Citadel Counterattack, Citadel Rescue, Padawan Lost, Wookiee Hunt. And then, of course, the events of Season 4, which would be Water War, Gungan Attack, Prisoners, Shadow Warrior, Mercy Mission, Nomad Droids, Darkness Unonbera, The General, Plan of Ascent, Carnage of Krell, Kidnapped, Slaves of the Republic, Escape from Kadavo, A Friend in Need, Deception, Friends and Enemies, The Box, Crisis on Naboo, Massacre, Bounty, Brothers, and Revenge. So we do have an order, and all that other stuff, starting with the Night Sister stuff, takes us through some more of these spreads, Witches and Demons, Overlords of Mortis, Prisoners and Predators, and then Depths of Evil, which is sort of a very condensed thing about Season 4. So thanks to this book, and thanks to the material provided by Leland Chi to Ryder Windham for that book, we have an order for the events of the Clone Wars cartoon series. How it splices in with everything else, we don't know, though we're given hints from time to time. The Hero of the Confederacy comic book story now has a time frame thanks to this book. We basically get a time frame for the Clone Wars tie-in comics for the most part, but nothing for the way that it fits in with the rest of the overall Clone Wars continuity that existed before the cartoon series started. But at least we got an order for the episodes.
You know, now I have the same book, and I've got it in my lap, and as Nathan's going over this, it's like Greek to me. He's calling out the names of these episodes, and not everywhere on here is it actually giving you the name of the episode. Sometimes it's just an image, and Nathan is just so uncanny at this that he's able to call it out like that. And I look at this, and that's exactly why I'm now having an epiphany right here for you. I've had this in my hand for about a month now, and I didn't even notice this, even though it says it in the front, because of how it is laid out. I mean, it really does not make sense to me, looking at this as a list of events and things and like that. It boggles my mind that you're able to do it so fast like that, man. I look at it like, where is he getting the titles for these at? How does he know where the what? And it just, I think it gets back to an underlying issue in a few episodes that we've said before of how convoluted the story is, especially certain eras. I mean, you know, we talked about in our San Diego Comic-Con episode about how you know, the episode 4 and episode 5 is just so mined that there's nothing to do. And the Clone Wars is almost so labyrinth-like that you have the same kind of a problem. It didn't even dawn on me that the last episode of season 1 takes place so much later than it does. And yet, by episode 2, I do recall that it was bouncing all over the place. So, I mean, I guess that does make a little sense, but I will be very interested to see down the road when they finally get, like, a little flow chart of how it's supposed to be. I mean, when I don't have the Clone Wars on DVD yet, but when I do, I want to watch it in a chronological order. I don't want to watch it season 1 to season 2 to season 3. That doesn't appeal to me. I don't always like connecting the dots. Granted, I may go back and I may watch like the Rookies arcs all together and that kind of stuff down the road, but I want to sit down and do a chronological order. And when that list comes out, I dare say this one is close to, but nowhere near acceptable enough for a fan who's of my limited timelining knowledge here. I mean, I'm looking at this just like, how is he doing this? I'm so lost. I'll keep it muted. No one will know.
It helps that I, you know, have to get this stuff straight as much as I can before I put out any new release of the Star Wars Timeline Gold. It helps that we discuss the continuity stuff for Republic Forces Radio Network each time new episodes air. And it helps that, you know, whenever something like this does come, I'm able to turn around and ask questions to get clarifications. There wasn't a whole lot of clarifications needed on this, but there were a few. The Mandalorian episodes thing was kind of a surprise, and I didn't even think about it until I actually did what you were just saying. This summer, I've rewatched the Clone Wars cartoon series in chronological order based on this order, and when I got to the Mandalorian episodes, I was like, wait a second. How could it possibly be in the order that they are listed in the book for the Mandalorian episodes when Almec gets arrested during the Season 3 stuff, and yet he's still somehow Prime Minister in the Season 2 stuff? And it turned out it was just something that was an error on the material that was given to Ryder and wound up finding its way into the book, which, you know, is understandable. You know,
yeah, I mean, I remember back in the Bantam days, errors were opportunities. Those were plot holes waiting to happen, and whole stories could have, you know, could just magically show up. But really quick here, you know, I just got to take the time to say it also helps, Nathan, to have fans like yourself who are just obsessed enough to make sense out of this kind of stuff. For fans like myself and other fans out there that are really going, wait, what? You know, I don't think you get enough credit in this case, and credit where credit is due. I mean, you know, like you said, 21 pages just added this year to your Timeline Gold. It's an impressive feat, something I have only printed once in my lifetime because it is just insanely huge.
Yeah, well, but, 2100 at this point, going on 2200. I don't know what it'll be when it's actually released, though I guess it'll probably be released shortly after we release this episode. I've been spending a lot of time this summer working on it, but as you know, you'll hear or may have heard in the San Diego Comic-Con episode, there are times, including now, where I look at what they're doing with Star Wars and I think, why should I bother? Why should any of us bother? If they don't care about continuity, why should we? But that's something we've covered previously. Hopefully the Timeline Gold will go on for years and years to come. This is year 15, so hopefully it'll go on for, you know, at least another few. You know, as long as they're producing stuff that is meant to actually all fit together.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, the chips might be down on us EU fans, but don't let it get to you, my man. There are people out there that actually count on what you do.
No pressure at all. No pressure at all. All right. We also have an email that came in this time around. This email came from Benjamin Kritzman. And Ben had some thoughts on the issue of Star Wars video games and some of the decisions that are being made as far as what games are being produced and what games aren't, and what games perhaps will be more likely to be successful.
Hey guys, just finished listening to your feedback episode for April. I figured I'd get my Shebsay in gear and send in an actual email instead of continuously bombarding your Facebook wall. Although we don't mind that either. Now, the title of this came to me while I was listening to the podcast, and like Yoda force lifting Luke's X-Wing out of the Dagobah swamp, it brought along with it, if not all, of the thoughts I've had before. Strapping yourselves in, you might want to consider. It's been 7 long years since we've seen any feature-length Star Wars movie grace the silver screen. Now, before you start saying, I know the Clone Wars had a movie that was released, but really, that was just 3 episodes strung together to launch a TV series, and poorly done, I might add. As far as I'm concerned, it's been just as long since we've had a sustainable Star Wars video game be released. Not to mar Tor or The Force Unleashed, but they didn't do all that well. Or haven't been consistent, as the player base for Tor has dropped noticeably. Hopefully things on the video game front will be changed, or at least changing, with Star Wars 1313. And I look forward to the episode about that, but for now, we'll just have to keep our fingers or lightsabers crossed.
Okay. Now, let me jump in here. This is thoughts I've jotted down. It's been a while since this originally appeared, but let me jump in here. If I can nitpick, you know, first off, you know, the movie The Clone Wars that was released in 08 was made up of 4 episodes, previously mentioned here in the episode. It has been 7 years since a new live-action Star Wars film, unless you count the 3D release of The Phantom Menace this February, so your point is well taken on that. But talking about those games that you mentioned, regarding the original The Force Unleashed back in 2008, you refer to it not doing well. Were you aware that the game sold 6 million copies in its first 10 months, and 1.7 million of that was in the first fiscal quarter it was released, making it the 3rd best-selling game globally in that quarter on any platform? the original game was the fastest selling LucasArts game ever, along with the fastest selling Star Wars game in history. Moreover, if you're talking about quality, we shouldn't forget that the writing team of that, headed by Hayden Blackman, who, Grant, is not with them anymore, won the Best Video Game Writing Award from the Writers Guild of America in 2009 for The Force Unleashed. The second The Force Unleashed game did have disappointing sales. It came in behind NBA 2K11, Fallout New Vegas, Medal of Honor, and Fable 3 in its month of release, but that still earned it the fifth best-selling game ranking that month, which is a feat that many game companies would beg for, and which beat Halo Reach in sales, with that flagship Xbox 360 game being just a month old at that point. Now, The Old Republic, he mentions. It has been inconsistent in a layman's perspective, but it depends on how you measure consistency. You seem to measure it by how many subscribers drop off the game, rather than how many sign on. The game had 1 million subscribers within just 3 days of its launch in the U.S., That made it the fastest-growing MMO of all time, even compared to World of Warcraft. It eventually hit 1.7 million, then yes, dropped to 1.3 million. Why did it drop? Most likely because people bought the game, used the month included with it, then didn't subscribe further. You know, is that inconsistent? Sure, it dropped from the initial spike that everyone expected if they had any sense of how MMO games are bought and sold in terms of the free months of service versus the later subscription costs, yeah. And 1.3 million players may pale in comparison to World of Warcraft's 12 million or so, but stats also show that World of Warcraft does not lose 30% or so of its player base once its free trial run ends like The Old Republic did. World of Warcraft loses a whopping 70% after the trial period ends. The Old Republic has sold over 2 million units globally, 1.2 million in the U.S. by itself. By comparison to The Old Republic having 1 million subscribers in just 3 days, within 4 days, the first Knights of the Old Republic game had sold 250,000 copies, or 25% of the sales numbers for the Old Republic. So by what definition, from the standpoint of BioWare, LucasArts, Microsoft, or EA, could these games be said to, as you put it, have not done too well? Sure, some fans griped about the Death Star in the first The Force Unleashed, the lack of a The Force Unleashed 3 that made the ending of The Force Unleashed 2 stand out as an oddity, and yes, gaming review sites tended to pick on the aiming mechanics of the games and expected more of a jump between the two than we got. But Lucasfilm is a business, as we went into in the San Diego Comic-Con stuff when it comes to money. Success is based on financial results, not gaming website review scores or disgruntled tiny but vocal elements of fandom. So by those definitions, I don't see how those could be considered failures as games, inconsistent as games, and so forth. I mean, I get that you're saying that some fans just didn't really get the kick out of it that they should have, but I'm not sure they can be seen as dismal failures or anything like that by any means. Anyway, moving on.
Moving on. Before I get too far off my own beaten path, the main point of this email is to question. How much longer does Star Wars and the EU have if people at LucasArts don't give us quality? For the longest time, on nearly every forum I've read or YouTube video I've seen, there have been posts and comments bringing up several common demands, for lack of a better word. Battlefront 3, Knights of the Old Republic 3, Republic Commando 2, and, this one's my personal favorite, new Star Wars movie! Now, I know KOTOR 3 got morphed into TOR, and, well, it's nice as TOR is, I think they would have had a much bigger hit with KOTOR 3. It could have tied up those loose ends from the previous two games. Don't you even mention that god-awful Revan novel. I haven't read it myself, so I don't know yet, I can't say. And present us with so much more. It wouldn't even need to be KOTOR 3. It could have been any one of these things I've mentioned, or even something new like Star Wars 1313. Just give us the quality that we've been given in the past years.
Beep, beep, beep. Time out. Pausing again. All right, whether The Force Unleashed or The Old Republic are your cup of tea, I'm not sure they can be lumped into LucasArts not giving us quality. Certainly not relative to some of the really bad eras of Star Wars gaming, such as that glut of games that we had that was cashing in on The Phantom Menace. And as much as you might say, don't even mention that god-awful Revan novel, you seem to be in the minority on opinions on that novel. For many, it was a great way to tie together the KOTOR and TOR materials to set up Revan's appearance in The Old Republic. Many of those loose ends have now been tied up, even without a KOTOR 3. And let's face it, in an era when LucasArts finds significantly greater success when its console releases are multi-platform, between PS3 and Xbox 360, with often alternate versions on the Wii and handhelds, why would LucasArts or BioWare put all their eggs in one basket for a new KOTOR console game that would, if I'm understanding the contractual stuff from a few years back correctly, have been pretty much guaranteed to be an Xbox 360 exclusive? Kinect Star Wars was an exclusive, but its costs were far less than what BioWare would have incurred to create a new KOTOR game. A console exclusive, by definition, limits profit potential for a third-party developer. I'm curious also as to what era in Star Wars gaming you'd refer to as the quality we've been given in years past, given that every era has had its share of crap games alongside the greats. And I should note, LucasArts isn't even the company producing that quality, good or bad, most of the time, as they farm out projects to other game developers like BioWare for the KOTOR and TOR games, or Chrome Studios for games like Republic Heroes. Again, I'm not agreeing with the premise here, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, for me, I have to agree, though, in the aspect of how much longer does Star Wars and the EU have if the people don't give us quality. But I think this goes back to, for me, what I mentioned in the San Diego Comic-Con episode of how every single Star Wars and Expanded Universe works stands on its own, and in it, you're going to like, dislike, love, and hate something about it. I think possibly in this case, there might be things about certain games like The Force Unleashed 2 that you didn't like or hated. But I think even with KOTOR, you know, there were things on that that, you know, the graphics weren't all that they could have been. I mean, they were great for the time, but the story was definitely sound. And now for me on with The Force Unleashed 2, it was the end of the story that was the real negative for me. Otherwise, I really enjoyed the game. But there is a definite something there about the aspect of the fan common demands that he mentions. There is definitely a big demand for a Battlefront 3, a Republic Commando 2, and a lot of people have been wanting that KOTOR. A lot of people are settling for TOR, but there is a small contingent of those that don't want to have to buy the console to play the game that still want to see their console game. That gets into that whole, you know, like you just mentioned with the whole exclusive aspect of it. It's going to be difficult there. I'm with Nathan on that one. It's a little hard to, you know, to say what's the quality we've been given in the past without acknowledging that some of the stuff that you're not liking is also quality to a degree. So we're going to go ahead and continue on, though. While I'm dumbfounded as to why LucasArts wouldn't want to bring a new, younger audience into the massive Star Wars universe with a new movie or video game, I know for a fact there are plenty of choices to be drawn from. Two prime candidates, I think, for a new movie are anything involving the Clone Commandos, ARC Troopers, and Clone Troopers through the Clone Wars, and even into the beginning of the Empire. On a private note, I got to agree with that one. Revan and his company, the Jedi Exile and her company, and their times together.
Or maybe a cartoon series aimed at first at younger audiences. Maybe tie-in games like a Wii game that lets you duel with lightsabers, or cutesy games where you play Star Wars film and cartoon scenarios with Legos. You know, the need for a new, younger audience is likely a big part of why they haven't produced more Republic Commando or Revan and Exile games. What new, potential young fan would be drawn in more by an FPS or RPG game based on characters and situations dormant on consoles for almost a decade now, rather than something cutesy and continuity light like LEGO Star Wars Lightsaber Duels or Republic Heroes? What young potential Star Wars fan is more likely to be captivated by a one-shot live-action film than an ongoing cartoon series they can see week after week after week in small doses that better fit a child's attention span, which, by the way, is generally assumed to be about 1 minute per year of age? You're basically saying LucasArts is dumb for not using these continuity-heavy or old game franchise concepts in a new form to grab a new audience that knows nothing about them going in. How does that make logical sense? It's the same thing as what's going on with the Star Wars stuff that was announced at San Diego Comic-Con. You know, for better or worse, if their business model is, as you're suggesting, that they need to bring in more new fans, then as continuity frustrating as things are with what they announced with that, say, that Star Wars ongoing series, then you have to do something that's less continuity-related. And saying, we're going to bring in new fans by going back to these things that haven't been touched on in years seems like it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, you ask somebody who's a new fan, you know, hey, what about those Republic Commandos? You mean Rex and them? What are you talking about? I can't imagine a new fan, many of them even having a clue what Republic Commando even is. Keep in mind that a lot of the young fans they want to bring in now are being raised on, if they're playing video games at all, this generation of consoles. And these games, like Republic Commando, these are not games from this generation of consoles. I mean, what, the original, the old Knights of the Old Republic was what, 2003? I mean, it's been a decade now since Attack of the Clones. So I don't see how those are ideas that would bring you new audience members.
My son is actually lucky in the aspect that I have not got a next-gen system, because the Xbox is in his room and he has all my Star Wars games at his disposal. So he's been playing all the old Xbox classics. But, you know, it's one of those things that had I had the new system, you're absolutely right, Nathan. I mean, he would not have any of the joy of Republic Commando or the Battlefront games. He'd have no clue what those are even, you know, what they were. And I think that is an issue, a side issue for me with the gaming industry about the, what they call that, the reverse compatibility. It's like, why not make your system so you can play the games on the last one, on the new one, and continue to have the fun and enjoyment? I don't know. It's just one of those things that scratched my head. Now, of course, I wouldn't ask them to adapt things word for word or scene for scene, because frankly, that would be too difficult and very well blotch things from the get-go. Not to forget the seemingly never-ending ringing of flack from fanboys and fangirls who are upset no matter what, because you cannot please us all.
Boop, boop, boop. If I can time out again, it also doesn't make good business sense. Hey, compare the sales numbers, for instance, on film novelizations versus original novels in Star Wars, or comics that adapted novels like Splinter of the Mind's Eye to original works. Compare critical reception and sales past the first week for original Star Wars games like The Force Unleashed to film tie-ins that are so often just seen as cash grabs. Why would Lucasfilm or any of its licensees say, well, we know we can draw in more profit from producing something new that fans will grab because they're new stories, but let's just rehash something they've seen before again where the story's already known instead, thereby automatically causing a big chunk of the audience to ignore our product because they already know everything about that story. It doesn't make good business sense to adapt previously existing stuff if they're trying to bring in new audiences.
Yeah, not without reinventing said story. I could go on about both of those, and probably will in future emails. But for the sake of time and length of this already protracted topic, what do you guys think about this? Well, Nathan's had quite a bit to think about it, and he's, you know, gave it to you as it is. Now, I myself, you know, I don't know. I kind of come and go. I'm a free bird. He continues, is there any hope for a new Star Wars movie or any of those game sequels? Why is the big man himself so gun-shy about another Star Wars movie? Best regards, Benjamin.
Well, to answer that last paragraph, if it's I guess not obvious already, try to give a little bit more detail to the thoughts here. I think it's mostly nuts. All right. And I mean that kind of in the smirking sort of way. I agree. The saga needs new fans, and we need quality products. As soon as we dip below the surface layer, though, I can't agree with most of the arguments towards that end that were made here. But yeah, we need quality stuff, and we need stuff that is going to bring in new fans. Hopefully that'll be stuff that actually fits with previously existing continuity. Hopefully it'll be stuff that is successful both for old fans and new fans. Do I expect to see a new Star Wars film? No. Personally, no. Not unless the Clone Wars ends with the theatrical release the way that it began, but even then it still wouldn't be live action. Why is Lucas gun-shy? I don't think it has anything to do with being gun-shy. He said repeatedly over the years, both before and after prequel production, that he wants to do other things. You know, try out new avenues for the saga like television and to avoid giant production efforts required for a live-action Star Wars film. I mean, the man's nearly 70. And he spent about half of each decade from the 1970s until the first decade of the new millennium on Star Wars live-action films, and then the rest of the last decade and the first part of this decade on Star Wars in CG animated form. I mean, when should he make another live-action film? I mean, in his 80s? In his 90s? As for the game sequels, that you might see better luck with, but not for the reasons you gave about drawing in a new, younger generation of fans. I can't imagine we'll ever see a KOTOR 3, given how much has been wrapped up in MMO and novel form, and Republic Commando ties too much into the novels of the same name that I'm betting that's rather taboo right now on the production side of things. Battlefront? Maybe. But I'd expect more new series in the saga from here on out in video games than returns to old standbys, especially on consoles and handhelds.
I would say when it comes to new fans, I wouldn't be that worried about it. I mean, it definitely seems Star Wars as a franchise has that mentality of new is better, and let's bring in as many new fans as we can. I think of it in that business sense, that it's easier to fire your employees that have been with you for 15 years and bring someone completely fresh off the street that's willing to do whatever you say, no matter what, than it is to make the job work for that person that's been there 15 years and listen to them and find out what their complaints with the new system may or may not be. I've seen that in multiple companies where that kind of mentality is the dominating one, and I think that that's the same thing in Star Wars, that it's much easier just to bring in new fans than it'll ever be to fix continuity and please the ones that have been around for so long and seen all the different George Lucas statements here, there, and everywhere. You know, as for the new movie, I don't see it happening. I'm with you in the desire for one. I think it would be awesome to see, you know, maybe do like the trailers for Tor Hope and you know, what we saw with Deceived, that trailer. Those were excellent. You know, I've seen some great mashups and stuff of the Force Unleashed gameplay and stuff done in a movie styling. But I don't see it happening as long as you say, the gun-shy man himself is not going to want to go there. And as long as he's not going to want to go there, he's not going to let anybody else go there. And if we can't get a reboot, then that's never going to happen as long as George is alive. I just have a hard time seeing it, not unless he's willing to go there. As for the gaming sequels, I'm with you 100% in the aspect of scratching my head as to why some of these haven't been done, but not necessarily for the same reasons you're bringing up. I mean, for me, it just seems like a winning strategy to do a Battlefront 3. You know, we did, in a sense, get a Battlefront 3 in the handheld games where they did give us an actual story, but I'm at this point, I'm even okay with them making that Battlefront 3. Give us a couple extra levels, do whatever you need to, but there is definite demand out there for some of these games. Republic Commando 2, you know, this whole console issue, maybe that alone is prime reason why we should see a Republic Commando 2. But let's not call it Republic Commando 2 because it's on a new gaming system. It's just another Republic Commando game. You know, let's call it Republic Commando Arc Troopers, or I don't know, something crazy. It doesn't have to necessarily be a number 2, but I do think there's potential there. As for the big man himself, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious why he's gun-shy. I mean, you know, you write and make things as awesome as Star Wars, and you get dissed as hard as he's been. It's kind of, why would you want to go out there? I mean, I think he was tongue-in-cheeking it when he had said it, but he had said something very similar to why everyone's just going to hate it anyway. And I think that is the big reason why he's gun-shy. But the other side of it is I think he's got other things to do, and he just doesn't really care that much about telling the movie side of things. And if he did, there's that whole continuity aspect of, oh boy, here we go. What are we going to get next? I mean, granted, that's a whole other wild ride for totally different reasons. But right now, today, at the moment of this recording, after recording another episode about continuity issues, I'd rather not go there.
Right. And the last item that appears on our agenda for this feedback episode is an interesting question that was posed by one of the listeners. He actually sent me the email, and I went ahead and passed it along as well. Or passed along the idea as well, though not the original email. And it was from a listener who is in the process of putting together his will. I mean, it's not that he's in bad health or anything, not that he expects to die anytime soon, but, you know, when you've got a family or when you're, you know, kind of getting to that midpoint of life, having an actual living will is a good idea, especially if you live in one of those probate states where, you know, if you die and you don't leave a will, it's up to the state to decide what gets done with any of your stuff, any of your assets. And this is a guy who had built up a pretty large Star Wars Expanded Universe collection, as I have, Mark, I know you are. The question he asked then was, you know, if you had to decide what you would do with your collection in a will, you know, what you would do with it after you died, what would be the suggestions for it? And I gave a few suggestions of my own, and we talked about it a little bit through email, but I asked him, you know, is this something that would be okay for us to bring up here on the show? Because it might provoke some more discussion out there about this particular issue. So before I say anything about what I had suggested, Mark, what would you say?
This is something I've actually been avoiding myself. You know, like you said, Nathan, it is something that everybody should think about. And when you have a collection as big as mine and Nathan's and obviously the writer here, it's something that you think about quite a bit. You know, my collection's more than just Star Wars, and I've got 3 kids now. I had 2, and it was hard enough with 2. Now I've got a 3rd. And when it comes to my Star Wars side of things, I'm perplexed because it's like I've got a lot of stuff in storage that, as of moving, we're currently about to start moving. I'll be moving Echo Base. It'll be going somewhere else here soon. And I'm going to be going up into my storage unit. And I want to get those things out, set them out, do kind of like what you've done, Nathan, take pictures of all the stuff. Because I put them in boxes, most of the stuff, before I even had a digital camera. And now I'm like, man, I got so much stuff, I don't even know what I have. And I got to get to that point where I got to chronicle all this stuff to kind of figure out where, you know, a will is a huge, huge endeavor. And it's one that I've been putting off for far too long. And I think for me, I get to a point of panic. I mean, every time I think about doing the will, I just kind of shut down. There's so much going on. It's the same thing when I think about fires and floods. Those are the 2 big things that I think the biggest things I fear about from a personal possession standpoint, you know, we're not supposed to care about personal possessions. I get that. I do it anyway. And, you know, fire and flood would be the number one things to destroy everything I have. And I think about everything that I've acquired over these years, the decade of plus collecting, and it's irreplaceable. You know, I'm not going to be able to find half the stuff again, probably not for the prices I did. And then it gets down to, well, does my son even want this stuff? Am I just forcing it on? I mean, Grant, right now he loves it all. He wants to play with all my stuff, and the big joke is sooner or later you're going to get it all. But what if my daughter wants it? You know, I mean, I have a real hard time with this. I mean, I'm watching my grandparents are all still alive but one. And when that one passed away, watching my aunts and uncles struggle over what to do with his stuff, and my grandma, his wife, had a hard time. You know, she didn't know what to do. They didn't have his will made out. And watching how that played out, it's definitely something that you don't want to put off for too long. And I'm having a gut check moment here because, you know, I do. I put it off way too long. And here comes this great question that makes me stop and think, what will I do? I mean, there is so much there, and I want to kind of preserve it. We can't all be as great a collection as what we see down at the Obi-Wan Ranch, you know? I mean, Steve Stansweet's collection is just insane, and yet he's got this great museum. It's got all this fire protection stuff. That'd be great to do. I don't think I could do something like that. I have a hard enough time just thinking which one of my kids is going to get the whole collection, or do I split it up? I mean, I've got so many facets of my collection that it would be easy to split it up. But again, it gets back to, do they even want it? Do I wait to do my will until they're old enough to ask them? Or do I make it a surprise? I mean, it's definitely something that, while I have thought about it, I never thought too hard on it. And I think it's that whole, the immortality of your own self kind of thing. It's like, I don't want to look and see it at the reality of, I'm not going to be here that long. I want to pretend that I'm going to live forever kind of thing. And thinking about my death and what I'm going to do with my prized collection. It's just like, huh. I've got another side of it because I'm going to inherit my father's Star Trek book collection. My dad is as nuts about Star Trek as I am about Star Wars. At least he was up until he got to about his 30s. So up in the attic, we have got boxes and boxes and boxes of the continuity, just riddled train wreck that is the Star Trek books. That I'm going to get all of them. And all his little micro machines, his folders, his calendars. Same thing with Lord of the Rings from when he was a Tolkien fan back in the day. And so I've got that that's also going to be added to this collection. And it's like, again, I get back to, who am I going to give it to? Do I give it to my son just because he's the next in line? You know, I mean, when I had my son, I saw that as the immortality. I was my dad's son. I'm a junior. And I have my son now. My first one was a daughter, so it was like, well, my name's not going to continue. You know, she's going to marry and have a new name. My line will end. The branch will die. Had my son. Okay, yeah, I'm going to live forever. My name will continue. So then does the logical aspect is, do I give it then to my son so my collection goes with the Herleman name? There's all these things that one has to consider. I mean, it's definitely something that I'm glad you brought up because it definitely makes me stop and look at my life right now. And I realized that, you know, I should probably stop sitting on my hiney so much, get up off my laurels and go down and do what you're doing. You know, take the time to sit down and really think about this kind of stuff. Sit down. I need to sit down with my wife and ask her what she thinks I should do. Because it's definitely something that's more than just me. I mean, it's my collection. But when I give it away, I'm going to be affecting my kids. I mean, you know, like I said, with my grandparents, when they passed, there are three kid scenario. My mom has got a sister and a brother. So it's the exact same thing. And my uncle walked away with a lot of stuff. Not everything, but a lot. And so watching how my aunts reacted to that, it's like, I don't necessarily want to put that on my son. So there's a lot to think about here.
You know, it's funny because you said the thing about the name needing to continue on, you know, sort of that male need a lot of times that we have to have our family name continue on into the future and so forth. And it struck me that at least, and it struck me a little while ago, that at least within my immediate family, you know, the people that I know as opposed to people who are far off, you know, distant relations, my mom had only sisters. My dad had only sisters. And I have only sisters. I have one sister biologically and some stepsisters, but it's very possible I'm the last butler of this line. My fiance and I are still working on setting a date. We're looking at June of next year being when we're going to finally get married. And, you know, everything sounds like it's really falling into place. But she's had a lot of health issues over the years. She had cancer. She beat it. She had cancer. And she's still dealing with a lot of the after effects of that and whatnot. And there's a big question mark over whether it's even possible for she and I together to have children. So thinking about just the idea that there isn't someone that naturally I would hand it off to. I don't have any kids right now, and it's quite possible I may never have any children. But again, the butler name may end with me in that sense. My sister's already married. Their last name is Fuhrer now, which I always kind of laugh about just a little bit, you know, the Sieg Heil and everything. But it led me to the question of, you know, well, what do I do with it, given the fact that I may not have children to leave it to? And in my case, one thing was, you know, whether or not Jody would want it, my fiance slash future wife, whether she would want to have the collection. But hopefully, you know, she and I, you know, years and years down the line, if I were to finally pass away, hopefully it wouldn't be an issue. You know, we go around the same time, so neither of us is alone and all that kind of sappy stuff. But I've thought, you know, if I were going to die anytime in the near future and she didn't want it, perhaps, to me, it's come back to who would pick up the timeline. You know, my Star Wars timeline gold, would I end it? Because there's been times where I've thought about ending it, you know, the continuity chaos and whatnot. And if I decided not to end it, and I keep going forward, and I keep producing that all the way up to the day that I die, whenever that may be, would I want someone and trust someone to pick it up and continue it? Or would I want the project to die with me? And if the project isn't going to die with me and I know who would pick it up and run with it, which I don't at this point, I have nobody in mind of such a thing, then it would seem like it would make sense to leave that library of sorts, that giant collection, for whoever is going to continue on with that. If that's going to be the torch that I leave within Star Wars fandom, then let me leave my stuff to that person. I've also thought about things like, you know, donating them. Obviously, if I'm in huge financial trouble and for some reason I don't have life insurance anymore, which I have now, if somehow I didn't have life insurance, they could sell it off, hopefully in big chunks, and maybe be able to make enough money to cover any debts or anything like that. Right now, the only debt that I've got is my car note on my new Kia Rio. Woohoo! Love that car. Still need a name for it. Need a Star Wars name for that car, if anybody can come
the
up
Air
with one.
The Air Adventure!
It's just a little graphite gray Kia Rio, 5-door. Haven't come up with a name for it yet, but I don't know. If it wasn't going to be sold off for debts or anything like that, I think that probably what I would want to do with it, if it wasn't going to someone to carry on the timeline, my other thing would be I would want to take that whole thing and either donate it to a charity or have someone who I trust would understand the value of some of the stuff, who could then split it up and then auction it off or whatnot, and then take that money and provide it to charity or provide it to, you know, something like what EUCantina.net is doing right now, like the youth literacy stuff, something, you know, something where that thing that to me has been a fun collection and a great resource as a Star Wars fan, but at the end of the day is just stuff. Let that stuff, instead of just being stuff gathering dust when I'm gone, let it be something that can somehow do some good, you know, whether it's good for fellow fans by keeping the timeline going with somebody else or doing some good, whether it's charities and whatnot. But yeah, it's weird, you know, kind of say, I didn't realize how different our perspectives were going to be on this because of our position as parent versus not a parent, because it's a whole different round of considerations to take in there. And I wanted to make sure that we talked about this on the show because I think it could spur some interesting discussion on the Facebook page and whatnot. And it's just something that maybe if you're a fellow Star Wars collector out there, maybe you've never thought of. And it might be something that might want to be within somewhere on your radar, especially as, you know, a lot of us fans are getting older at this point.
When I die, I want my Star Wars EU collection to be placed on display on top of George Lucas's casket with a note that says, "See, it did mean something. It was something. Here's the physical proof."
I would like all copies of X to be burned. That's good. Of course, I'm the one that says, you know, when I die, just cremate me. And, you know, if there's anybody that I really hate at the time, sprinkle a little bit into their food and then tell them. Of course, you know, that's just the facetious side of me. But, yeah, it's a good question. And I'm not sure that it's one that has one specific answer. I think everyone will have a different answer for that. Even when we're dealing with something where, you know, say you've got a parent, I would bet Mark's answer would be different than an answer for another parent or a parent of one child or a parent with several children, but maybe one that's more into it than others. I mean, it's all what you do with your death, what comes out of it is one of the most personal decisions that you can make. So I'm not sure that there is anything to say as a hard and fast rule other than to say, take the time to think about it, because if you don't, then when you pass, somebody else will have to. Somebody else, either as an executor within the family, will have to, or the state, depending on your state, will have to be the one to make that decision. And it's unlikely that they would make a better decision or one that you'd be more comfortable with than the decision you would make for yourself.
Here lies Nathan P. Butler. We all know he was a big Star Wars fan, and to celebrate that, we're going to offer his collection to everyone. Everyone come in and feel free to grab something to remember Nathan with. That could happen. And you're in your grave going, no, I should have built a pill. I should have built a will.
Maybe I should leave my collection to the troll on the requirement that it be dumped on top of his house. But that's all right. That's a whole other thing. But I don't know. You know, I mean, I would like to see it do some good, though. I'd like to see anything that I have do some good. If it's not something that Jody would be keeping or that family would want, I'd like to see them do something with it to be able to get some money for charity or something, you know, so that there's some positive stamp that's left. But again, I'm one of those guys who's grown up with sort of this sense of service, I guess. If it wasn't going to go into politics or something like that, then teaching, I guess, was sort of part, that's a big part of my natural draw towards teaching, I suppose. But anyway,
I'm already dead. It can't get any worse. I need some positive here, man.
There you go. Give me some good karma, please. Of course, that's not how karma's supposed to work. That's a whole other thing. Okay, with that, folks, we should be wrapping up our feedback episode here. As you notice, not a whole lot of specific emails being replied to here. We're replying to a couple of them. The more we get, the more often you'll see these feedback episodes, so make sure you send those in. You can send emails to either beyondthefilms@starwarsfanworks.com or swbeyondfilms@starwarsfanworks.com, the one we're sort of phasing in to get rid of that other one. You can also send us messages through Twitter at @SWBeyondFilms, catch us on Facebook and post to the wall there or in the discussion for a given episode. SWBeyondFilms is also what you just put after Facebook.com. Very easy to find us. So as you listen to these episodes and something strikes your fancy, send us a line so that we can then take that and run with it in future feedback episodes. For now, this has been Nathan P. Butler,
Mark Herleman, and Whistler,
saying, may the force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds.
And rest in peace, I guess.
May the force be with your bones, always.
May you return as a force ghost.
Or a Sith one if you're just bent on your dark side.
Or find your soul trapped inside the eye of Palpatine somehow to transfer into the child. Nah, never mind.
Watch out for the wills, though. They're like these little hobgoblins that exist in the afterlife. They like to snatch in. Teach you things.
Yeah, I think the wills are an incarnation of the light side of the force. You understand that there is an incarnation then of the dark side of the force that must be there, just like good and evil must be there, because where there's a will, there's a way.
That's true.